Good day, and welcome to the TGS Q2 2015 Earnings Results Presentation conference call. For your information, today's conference is being recorded. At this time, I would like to turn the conference over to Mr. Robert Hobbs. Please go ahead.
Hello, and welcome to TGS's second quarter 2015 conference call. I'm Robert Hobbs, CEO of TGS, and joining me today is Kristian Johansen, our COO and interim CFO. I'm pleased to confirm today that our new CFO, Sven Børre Larsen, will begin employment with the company on September 1, based in our Asker office in Norway. I look forward to having him join me on this call next quarter. I'd also like to thank Kristian for his role in holding two hats over the past several months as COO and CFO, and I'm looking forward to working with him in Houston as he moves to Houston and gets into the COO job 100%. Earlier today, we posted our second quarter earnings release and held a presentation of those results. A replay of that presentation is available on our website. I hope that you have had an opportunity to view this, and we'll now just give a brief summary of the main points before opening the call to questions. In the second quarter of 2015, TGS had total net revenues of $140 million, and a decrease of 32% compared to $205 million in the same period 1 year ago. Late sales for the quarter totaled $82 million, down 40% from Q2 2014, but up from 14% compared to the first quarter of this year. Net pre-funding revenues were down $53 million, down 12% from Q2 of 2014, funding 45% of the company's operational multi-client investments during Q2. Our multi-client investment totaled $116 million, 2% higher than 1 year ago. Proprietary revenues of $5 million were lower than the $8 million from 1 year ago. Our resulting operating profit was $36 million, 56% lower than 1 year ago, and represents 26% of net revenues. Earnings per share were 24 cents compared to 59 cents per share in Q2 of 2014. Cash flow from operations was $86 million compared to $66 million in Q2 of 2014. After payment of our dividend in May, our closing cash position was $176 million, which is in addition to our unused revolving credit facility, which will soon be expanded from $50 million to $75 million. Our backlog amounted to $242 million at the end of Q2 2015, an increase of 26% from last quarter. As expected, demand for seismic data continued to be depressed during the second quarter, although we were pleased with the 14% growth in late sales versus Q1. While TGS does not expect the market to improve for the remainder of the year, we also recognize that these market conditions provide an opportunity for countercyclical investments. This allows TGS to benefit from attractive pricing and beneficial commercial terms from our suppliers. During Q2, TGS was very active acquiring new data with two 3D vessels, three 2D vessels, one wide azimuth crew, and three land crews operating under TGS control. TGS was also a participant in six joint venture projects for 2D, 3D, ocean bottom, P-cable, and EM data. TGS continued to expand its library in proven basins such as the Gulf of Mexico and Barents Sea. TGS reached a number of initial milestones also during the quarter. We commenced our first 3D survey offshore Eastern Canada in partnership with PGS. And TGS also started acquisition of the Gigante 2D regional survey in Mexico. This 181,500 kilometer 2D survey is our first seismic project in Mexican waters and will continue well into 2016. On the 29th of June, TGS announced that it had entered into a letter of intent to acquire Polarcus's multi-client data library, with the exception of Australia, for a price of $27.5 million on a cash and debt-free basis. The data covers prime locations within the established hydrocarbon provinces of six countries along the Western Atlantic Corridor and comprises 40,000 square kilometers of 3D data and approximately 5,000 kilometers of 2D data. We expect to close this transaction during Q3. PGS will continue to take advantage of the asset-light business model combined with a strong balance sheet, and we've identified a number of attractive investment opportunities for the remainder of the year. A prepayment of acquisition costs related to the purchase of the Polarcus data library and slight acceleration of our investment plan in Mexico means that we now expect 2015 investments of approximately $490 million. Our revenue guidance remains unchanged at this point at approximately $630 million. At this time, we'll open the call for your questions. Please press star 1 to pose your question. Operator, I'll now turn the call over to you, please.
Thank you, sir. If participants would like to ask a question at this time, please press the star followed by the digit 1 on your telephone keypad. Please ensure that the mute function on your telephone is switched off to allow your signals to reach our equipment. We will pause for just a moment to allow everyone to signal. We will now take our first question from Ray Ulfert from JP Morgan. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Good afternoon, Rob. Good afternoon, Christian. Congratulations on the strong results today. I have a few questions, please. One is on payment terms with customers. How are these negotiations going with customers? Christian earlier in the morning said that a large part of the revenue decline is volume-based and not pricing-based. But are you exploring new payment terms with customers? Are they asking for delayed payment terms where they want to pay for the seismic library over a couple of years? Or how are those negotiations panning out?
Yeah, it's pretty rare that we agree to payment terms over that sort of time period that you referenced. But most of our transactions are traditional from the standpoint of any late sales are payable in a reasonable 30-day period. However, there are occasionally periods of time, and this is actually probably an advantage that TGS has with our strong balance sheet. There are occasionally deals that we might do with players where we agree to longer payment terms that might, for example, go into the next budget year. But it's rarely that they go longer than, into the first part of the next budget year. And then, of course, when we have pre-funding on new projects, those payment terms are related to percent of completion. So, based upon, milestones during the project as we complete acquisition and processing, we invoice the customers, and those invoices are typically paid on a 30-day period. So I guess I would say that we've been seeing a mix of regular payment terms and occasional extended payment terms over the past several years, and I guess that really hasn't changed right now. I suppose we still see a similar mix . But it's very rare it's very rare when one deal goes past really the into the next budget year.
Understood. And I think last time when we spoke, you mentioned that it has been quite tough to get pre-funding on new projects, and this with the increase in investment that you've proposed without changing your revenue guidance, does that reflect that it has got tougher to get pre-funding now, and therefore you're expecting even lower? Are you lowering your pre-funding thresholds in new projects?
No, we're not lowering our thresholds for new projects at all. I think it's probably more of a reflection on our view of the market and really sort of the late sales aspect of our revenue stream, and our feeling that we need to be cautious there. And we believe that we're going to be in a very difficult market, certainly through the end of this year, and most definitely on into 2016. So I think it's more of a reflection of our caution on sort of the late sales aspect. We, in fact, with our most recent investments, I would say we've become a bit more rigorous in looking for higher pre-funding hurdles before we have actually approved newer investments, given the market conditions that we're in right now.
Understood. And the last question from me, please. I was looking at the results, and it seems that the Africa and Middle East segment has again produced a loss. And your press release also stated that you've not impaired any libraries, which was probably the reason why it was in loss in prior quarters. Why? What would be the problem in that segment? What is the data library about?
Well, I can answer that question, Raul. I think in general, you will see that we had a high percentage of our sales coming from very old vintages that are fully written off the balance sheet. But at the same time, we had a very high amortization rate. So I think you can take from that we amortized our new surveys that are still in progress very high because we want to be conservative on that given the market. And we also did some adjustments on the amortization rate of older surveys, especially in this region, which failed to sell according to expectations over the last couple of quarters. We tried to take a very prudent view and make sure that we keep the library under control and make sure that we're still ahead of this amortization schedule that you see on one of our slides.
Understood. So, but these adjustments on old surveys, you're not calling them impairments. It is you're rewriting its book value.
Yeah, basically that's what we do.
Okay, understood. Thank you. I'll hand it over.
We will now take our next question from Rob Pullen from Morgan Stanley. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Hi. Good afternoon, gentlemen. A few questions from myself, if I could. And apologies if maybe we cover similar topics. So the first one is you highlight that you're going to spend more on multi-client given the counter-cyclical opportunities, which makes a great deal of sense. But what really has changed since the first quarter? Is it that day rates have fallen incrementally since then, or you just have more confidence in doing this counter-cyclical investment? The second question I had was that, you know, when I look at one of your regions, it's loss-making at the EBIT line again. Is that because you're particularly aggressively amortizing those surveys versus other regions? I'm just wondering. Finally, if I may, in terms of the older surveys, which obviously have very little, if any, book value, a large contribution from them again this quarter, to what degree is that sustainable and where did it come from again? Thank you very much.
Yeah, sure, Rob. I'll take a shot at those. In terms of our, you know, what might have changed since the first of the year in terms of our investments, the first obvious one is the Polarcus deal. And that has added to our reported investments, that's added $20 million because we had reached a deal with Polarcus where they actually acquired data and we could not invoice this $20 million until because those amounts were contingent upon sales. As part of the Polarcus deal, we agreed to go ahead and prepay that $20 million, which was the biggest addition to our guided investments early in the year, I guess biggest single addition. The rest of the change, I guess, from what was guided, the 430, I guess, that was guided early in the year to where we are now are a few projects that where we reached very good supplier terms, and these projects are largely in the Western Hemisphere. You will see that we've announced four vessels in Mexico, and we have two new 3Ds in Eastern Canada. Certainly, the Mexican investments, we have actually accelerated our investment there by bringing in a fourth vessel earlier than what we had planned to originally. And then we're quite excited about customer feedback on our Eastern Canada investments. And us, along with PGS, have decided to move forward some 3D investments in Eastern Canada in that particular play. In regards to your second question, it was a very similar question to what Raul asked previously in terms of Africa, Middle East, and our amortization that we've taken there. As Christian answered, we're very careful, particularly in that region, given the pullback from our customer base from that region, given hydrocarbon price. We've been very careful to make sure we're setting appropriate amortization rates on that data library. So we're looking at that on a constant basis, and the numbers that you see associated with our Africa, Middle East, Asia Pacific region in terms of our profitability is certainly impacted by our view on amortization on the projects that we have in that area. And then I can't remember your third question. Christian reminds me. Yeah, the older vintage. Yeah, we had a large percent. I think it was 24% of our sales came from fully written down surveys this quarter. That as you've seen, if you review our numbers over the past few years, that varies widely on a quarter by quarter basis, and actually is pretty hard to predict. And is a function of sales mix. So you know which projects customers choose to buy in any given quarter. It was particularly high this quarter, but again, as I just answered, you know, we look pretty hard at the newer vintage data sets to make sure that we're amortizing those appropriately, and we admittedly are, you know, in a market that we're in right now, we want to be especially cautious and make sure that we carry appropriate amortization rates on those newer vintages.
Okay. Thank you very much. And sorry, maybe just one quick follow-up on Mexico, which you mentioned, and obviously we saw the backlog improvement, which looks encouraging. But I think it's fair to say that the uptake on blocks on offer in Mexico thus far has been relatively muted. Presumably you expect that to turn around, and sort of what time frame do you think the data sales for Mexico could become significant for yourselves?
Well, I mean, first of all, our program in Mexico carries very good pre-funding. We're happy with the pre-funding levels we have on our project. So we have good customer interest on the project, on the data that we're acquiring down there. The Mexican authorities are holding this license round in several stages. This first stage that occurred a couple of weeks ago was for exclusively shallow water blocks. And we suspected that, you know, most of the interest in this initial round of tenders was probably going to be skewed more towards the deep water versus the shallow water. And I think that's what, you know, I think we saw evidence in this first phase of the Mexican rounds. We're optimistic that, and this is based upon, you know, direct customer feedback that we have from our from the participants in our survey. We're optimistic of the view of international oil companies on investing in Mexico, and right now we're not, you know, that doesn't give us too much concern what happened a couple of weeks ago in the shallow water tender round. I will note that the Mexican authorities came out, I believe it was yesterday, and announced a slight delay in the next round, which will be deep water blocks. And in addition to that, they announced that they're reviewing the commercial terms that will be adhered to, and are actually relaxing some of those commercial terms. So I think that they've taken feedback from the first phase of the round and are adjusting adjusting terms in the next phases of this first round as we move into the deep water. So I think that's very positive.
Okay, that's very interesting. Thanks very much, and I'll turn it over.
We will now take our next question from Asuro Samidi from Radiant Value. Please go ahead.
Good morning, gentlemen. Two questions. One is, what fraction of your CapEx or the multi-client investments are you doing on onshore assets? Is that where E&P companies' CapEx is shifting towards? I know you were made this acquisition a year or two ago. How's that? Can you give some color on, you know, your outlook on that aspect of your business?
Sure. Yeah, we don't disclose the split between offshore and onshore. I will say that all of our onshore investments are reported in our North and South America figures that you see in our earnings release, because that's where all of our onshore multi-client activity is. And that's where we, you know, foresee it being in the near future. That's just where all the opportunities are in the unconventional plays in North America. Yeah, we got into this business. We first started investing in the onshore in 2012, so we've only been investing for in the play for about 3 years now. And as part of our investment was to expand our ability to process onshore data, but also move into the Canadian unconventional market. And so we acquired a company called Arcus, as you've rightly pointed out, in 2012. And we've been very happy with that investment. It's performed performed quite well for us. And I would say, you know, our investments as a whole in North America and the onshore have performed to our expectations. I will say that when we look at new investments in the onshore plays, and particularly now with the market being the way it is, we have very high hurdle rates when it comes to pre-funding being required before we sanction investments. So we want to make sure that really all our costs are pretty much covered up front before we commit to an investment in the onshore, just to reduce our risk in that play, because at least in the U.S. side of the play, there aren't federally driven license rounds, so there's not the predictability of timing that you might have like you do in the offshore in terms of acreage turnover.
I mean, that's obviously a problem for a multi-client offering, because most companies tend to dominate or try to dominate an acreage and then diminish the value proposition for a multi-client approach like yours. So effectively, the onshore North American is more like a traditional contract basis work. Is that correct, or how do you?
Not necessarily. I think if you were to look at the 3D activity in North America right now, you'll find a somewhat high percentage of multi-client data being acquired by TGS as well as some of our competitors there. You know, the financial structure, you rightly point out, is different. And, you know, again, I go back to saying, you know, the level of pre-funding that we demand for a project is, on average, quite a bit higher than what we would do on your average offshore project, multi-client project. Because the surveys are smaller, and as you rightly point out, oftentimes the percentage of acreage, you know, the dominance of one company underneath a single survey may be typically higher than what you would find in an average offshore project like in the offshore Gulf of Mexico. But we've still been able to adapt our business model to get similar returns on our investment onshore to what we see offshore.
Where do you see stress from this low-price environment? I mean, I know you're on the early stage of the investment thought process, but, you know, are you seeing people cut back either on onshore or offshore because of this, you know, long-term commodity bear market that the futures curve is predicting?
We see pullback everywhere. I think across the board, really around the world, and offshore versus onshore, you know, frontier basins versus producing basins, mature basins, we've seen a pullback. It's been a pretty even pullback. It's hard to point to one particular basin or one particular area that's suffered more than another.
I see. And in terms of deep offshore, this is my last question. Deep offshore, or these high capex projects that might, you know, people make those investments not on today's oil price environment, but a long-term environment. What kind of price range, you know, do your customers think would make sense for, you know, going with, you know, working in Brazil, Colombia, Peru, West Africa? You know, are there regions that get cut off because of the low price environment, or just in terms of their customers' ability to keep reinvesting capital?
Yeah, that's an impossible question to answer, really, because it depends upon the view of attractiveness and the timing of the development. I can tell you that we've had recent sales of projects in extremely frontier areas in which you're not going to see production probably for 15, 20 years, and oil companies are buying seismic data there. There are areas, you know, in more proven areas, less frontier areas, but they might be high cost, high political risk areas that companies are clearly pulling back on. So it's that's a That's a question that's, you can't really generalize on the answer to that question. It's very different dependent upon the basin and dependent upon the region.
Great. Thanks, Robert. Look forward to more things to come.
Sure.
We'll now take our next question from Christian Malik from Nomura. Please go ahead.
Hi, good afternoon, gentlemen. Just two questions for you. First of all, I want to understand, just, I know you've gone through the topic of amortization quite a lot of detail, but just if you can shed light on the metrics or framework you use around how you go about or the assumptions you use in valuing your multi-client book and then to the process of amortization. And I say that in the context of, you know, you talked about an uncertain outlook. Well, if oil stays at these levels for the next 6 to 12 months, could we then see, on the basis of that framework, a reassessment of what you think it's worth? So ideally just the assumptions around the value. And then the second question regards to sort of the competition and pricing. Are you seeing pricing pressure drive margins potentially for future late sales lower, or what are the trajectory? Has it sort of stabilized at these levels? Just like to have an idea going forward where you see those margins moving to.
Okay, let me give the first question a shot. So what we do in terms of valuation of the library is that we have an individual sales forecast for every single project in our portfolio. And our portfolio contains probably a few hundred projects that's been shopped over many, many years. And we have sales forecasts for every single project that we update every quarter. And obviously, in light of the recent developments of the industry, we have taken a very, very careful look, and especially in a couple of particular regions, where we have increased our amortization rate quite significantly to take into account the uncertainty in the market. I think the best way for you to check whether we're prudent or not is to have a look at slide 19 in our earnings release that we show every single quarter. And what you will see if you look on that bar chart is that we're almost, or on average, we're about 1 year ahead of the amortization schedule that we have to follow in terms of coping with the requirements from auditors. So we have been very prudent in the past, and we will continue to be so. We would like to be ahead of the schedule, and we feel we've taken into account the uncertainty in the market.
I think on your second question regarding pricing pressures in the market we're in right now, in the challenging environment we have, you know, we are typically successful at holding the price on our projects, and that has to do with the fact that if you are the only multi-client company with data in a particular region in which an oil company has to have information and has to have data, you're able to hold that pricing. Where we do discounts is we will oftentimes, you know, sit down with a customer and negotiate a volume deal, so they're able to reduce their unit price by buying more data, which is, of course, better for us, too, because we're able to increase the revenue on a single deal. So we typically enter into things like that. Now, you know, I will tell you, obviously, in a market like we're in right now, we have our customers coming to us all the time wanting to see if they can do deals, A lot of that, they're smart. They know that we're a public company, and we do a substantial amount of our sales in any given quarter in the last few weeks of the quarter. So they're always out there, looking for deals. But historically, we've been able to, keep our pricing pretty stable. And so therefore, the margin expectation change. Obviously, as Christian's described, we're careful about, with the value of our data library and control that through the amortization rates that we set. Obviously if we have not been making adjustments to our amortization rates on some of our more recent projects, you would have seen a higher margin this quarter because we had a relatively high percentage of sales coming from fully written down surveys in this quarter. But we don't think it's necessarily prudent to do that. I think, you know, it's more prudent for us to be careful, make sure we reflect the difficult market conditions that we see right now, and set appropriate amortization rates on some of our more recent data, which, you know, amortization is the biggest factor in terms of determining our margins in any given quarter.
Sure, and just to follow up in terms of sort of future demand for multi-client, given where oil is, is there, you're not sensing sort of a reduced sense of urgency from clients to want to sign or pushing things out, which could argue that there are less deals, or vice versa? Are you sensing that they're taking advantage of it and wanting to, you know, use the current pricing environment? Where are we in that spectrum?
Well, I mean, first of all, demand for seismic data in general is down. I mean, it's a depressed market. So yeah, I mean, we're not seeing the volumes that we would like to see or that we used to see. But that's true both for contract and multi-client, right? I think, you know, in general, if oil companies are wanting new seismic data in new projects that haven't been acquired yet, I think what we're seeing now is we're seeing probably a higher percentage of oil companies willing to do it multi-client versus contract, because they understand that they can save money by doing it multi-client because they're sharing the cost with their competitors. So I would say in a market like we're in right now, our customer base is looking for more opportunities to acquire the data through the multi-client model versus the contract model. But, you know, overall, the volume of seismic data that's being acquired and is being purchased by the oil industry is dramatically lower from where it was.
Brilliant. Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
As a final reminder, if participants would like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. We will now take the next question from Daniel Ravik from Handelsbanken. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon. A question related to the backlog, which I think we touched upon this morning as well. The backlog increased to some $242 million, and I was just wondering, is this purely pre-funding?
Yeah, I'll turn that over to Christian.
It's a combination of pre-funding and late sales where the data hasn't been fully acquired yet. It's a combination of the two.
If we sell
data for a new survey, that, let's say we sell data in Mexico now after the first shot point, that will be recognized as late sales, and it will be part of the backlog because the survey has only been partly completed.
Okay, but can you say, I mean, is that late sales component, so to say, is that significant, or is it just a minor part of it?
No, it's a quite significant part of it. I mean, we don't provide any breakdown of that, but what we told the market this morning is that more than 50 million of the backlog of 242 relates to 2016 revenues. But we don't want to be more precise than that.
Okay, so not more exact than more than 50 million. Okay. And then just on the, so that I understood that correctly, the increase in the investment guidance, which was up from 420 to 490, and that included only the 20 million related to the deferred cost, so to say, to Polarcus, and not the 27.5 in the acquisition cost.
That's correct. Correct.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks. That's it for me.
There are no further questions at this time. Therefore, I would like to pass the call back to Mr. Hobbs for any additional or closing remarks.
Thank you, and thanks for participating in the call today. You know, TGS remains confident that the combination of our quality investments and our asset-light approach to the business, as well as the unparalleled expertise and enthusiasm of the employee base that we have, positions us well in the market that we're finding ourselves in, which is quite challenging. TGS remains focused on assuring that our cost structure is in line with our outlook on the future market, and we remain flexible and continue to implement cost savings measures to secure our profitability and allow us to maintain our leading position in the geoscience data industry. The company finds itself in a unique position to capitalize on interesting investment opportunities, as you've seen us do this quarter, while also continuing to deliver leading shareholder return. And so we're looking forward to reporting the rest of the year to you, and look forward to talking to you again next quarter.
Ladies and gentlemen, that will conclude today's conference call. You may now disconnect.